Welcome to The Good Stuff with Sonoma County Wine Growers. I'm Virginie Boone alongside Carissa Cruz, President CEO of The Wine Growers, here to talk about what makes Sonoma County such a special place to grow, make, and enjoy wine. And you got some stuff going on?
Lots of stuff going on. So what a great week. We had our Leadership Academy, the fourth class, graduation this past week. And it's one of my favorite things of the year, always.
How many boxes of Kleenex did you go through?
I know, a lot. So, yeah, it was our Leadership Academy. So I just should talk a second for folks kind of tuning in maybe for the first time. In addition to Sonoma County Wine Growers, which is a marketing organization really to support our local grape growers, we have a foundation that is really about supporting our vineyard workforce. And back in 2022... make sure I got my dates right. We started a Leadership Academy. So it was a way for ranchers, farmers to nominate one of their employees who works in the vineyards to join sort of a 6-month long program. It meets once or twice a month for kind of a half day. And it's about education beyond any farming skills. So like financial literacy and communication, conflict resolution. They learn about wine making. They actually learn wine tasting. They learn about agriculture around the state. So all sorts of topics. We limit the class to about 20 people each year, just so they can really network, get to know each other, like have kind of, you know, create a bond, so to speak. We modeled it on the Leadership Santa Rosa program. And so once they conclude their Leadership Academy program, we actually do a formal graduation for them. So they get to invite their families, their kids, spouses, partners, parents, et cetera, their employers. And invite them to walk across the stage. They have to wear, we don't put them in a cap and gown, but they have to wear the cap because you got to feel like you're a graduate. And it's always amazing. American Ag Credit is so generous. They donate $1,000 every year to the Leadership Academy members graduating, so they get kind of this nice gift card graduation present, so to speak, and a diploma. And it's just awesome because it's just, you know, they're beaming with like pride that they've accomplished this program, and they get to celebrate with their families. And
it is amazing.
So we are not going to Washington, D.C. this year with them. We've decided to sort of postpone that trip that we do in partnership with Alaska Airlines and Congressman Thompson's office. So we'll probably catch up hopefully next year, bring maybe the 25 and 26 class together.
Yeah.
But we are going to be headed to Sacramento next week. And we're taking last year's class, who are mentors, so they got paired with this year's class. So we're taking both classes. Some of their employers are joining us, and we are going to go to Sacramento. It's going to be a little bit of their capstone post-graduation, where they are going to meet with Secretary Karen Ross of Agriculture, CDFA. So they'll go to CDFA and then go tour the Capitol and meet with some of our elected officials.
How fun.
So, I know, kind of a good way. So, not D.C., but headed to the state capitol here.
Okay, and maybe you could see an A's game.
Huh, hadn't even considered that. I'll have to check and see if they're playing.
Okay, well, Although it sounds like it's a busy schedule.
But we got to support the Giants, since that's our partner. So,
yeah, we do.
We need to go to the Giants game.
Okay.
Not the A's. Boo. No, I'm just kidding.
We don't need to boo, but you are right.
I won't boo, but yes. But we should look into that. I know we do say that it would be fun to take a big group to a Giants game kind of later in the summer. So we'll have to look into that.
I think that would be fantastic.
And invite
fantastic.
Jeff, our producer, who's shaking his head, yes, that's a good idea.
And we can air live.
Oh, no, then that doesn't sound as like much
no,
fun
Jeff
for him.
No, Jeff said no.
Jeff says no on that. He'd rather just go and watch the game.
Yeah, it probably shouldn't be recorded or filmed in any way. No.
Let's keep it fun. Just fun. Nothing but fun.
Just fun. Lots of hits. Aspen, maybe?
Aspen's coming up too. So that's actually, they moved it away from Father's Day. So it's the weekend of the 21st and 22nd. So that's going to be really exciting. We are the top of the mountain wine partner this year. So we have 6 Sonoma County wines being poured at the top of the mountain, plus participating in the grand tasting.
Well, nothing better than that. We will be back soon on The Good Stuff to introduce our guests. Thank you for joining us on today's Good Stuff. In studio, we have Danny Price, proprietor, Fat Dragon Wine. So excited to have you here, Danny. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. This is very exciting.
It is exciting.
And you should fully disclose that you're friends.
We are friends.
Okay, there you go.
Aren't we friends with everybody who comes on?
I think
on?
We're friends with everyone.
But maybe different levels.
But
yes.
You both did your little giddy laugh there that was like, and so I was like, oh, there you go.
Yeah, got it.
I like that.
We are. But I would love to talk about, I mean, Danny, you've got a great, interesting background, and then we'll get to sort of the story about Fat Dragon Wine. But tell us a little bit about where you grew up and kind of how you started to get into wine.
I want to know it all.
Okay.
Yeah, Carissa really likes the origin stories.
I do.
The origin
story.
Yeah. So I grew up on Long Island, and I came from a family. Nobody really drank wine. Everyone drank beer and liquor. So I was kind of like the first one in my family to really appreciate wine. And let's see, where did it all begin? So I think it kind of all began when I did a study abroad program at Oxford University, and I joined the Wine Tasting Club. And it was super cool. And it was kind of showed me for the first time, like, this very serious side of wine and just how much there was to learn about wine with all the different wine regions. Mm-hmm. So I came home, I graduated from college, and my first job was actually not in wine. I worked for Calvin Klein. And my favorite part of my job was being able to go to nice restaurants on an expense account and drink really good wine that
That's
I otherwise
the best
couldn't
part
afford.
Any job.
So, well, talk exactly. to no, but what are you doing for Calvin Klein? How do you end up there? Because that's not a typical job, but certainly not for folks that we've had on our show.
No,
you
this
know,
is new.
I was always very good at school, and I was planning to go to law school. And it was a plan that kind of got derailed when a cousin of mine invited me. He was a lawyer at a top firm in New York City, and he kind of brought me into his law firm to teach me, to show me and educate me on, like, a day in the life of a lawyer.
Okay.
So he had me meet people in all different stages of their career, and I basically came home and I was like,
no,
you want to be a lawyer? No thanks, not for me.
Was that his point, you think?
It was 100% his point. He was miserable in his job. He didn't think it was a good career path for me, and he just wanted to, like, show me, like, when you're good at school, you kind of just want to keep doing school if you don't have another plan. And then my brother's girlfriend at the time worked at Calvin Klein. She's like, hey, do you think you want to work here? And I interviewed, and it was like my first interview. I got the job, and I'm like,
wow,
this sounds great.
That's amazing. That's a lot of influence from your family.
Yes,
on both sides.
Yes, it was.
But then you get slotted into a role where, so why were you taking people to dinner and ordering fancy wine?
Yeah.
So my role was basically, I was like a sales rep, and we sold the fashion line to a company called May Company, which was, so we were entertaining wine buyers, basically.
So May Company, like the department store.
May Company, exactly. So Macy's, Bloomingdale's.
Okay. Yeah.
So anyway, so got to go to all these great restaurants and entertain, and I really was like that person at Calvin where I was the go-to person for anyone that needed a date, a restaurant recommendation, and I just absolutely loved wine.
And you're in New York City.
I'm in New York City, in Manhattan, and I kind of got a clue that I wasn't following my passion when my boss called me into her office to go over my expense report. I had been on a business trip, and I was down in Washington, D.C., and I had gone to University of Maryland. I love crab. So I went by myself to my favorite restaurant in Georgetown. I had crab cakes and a glass of Sancerre. So she calls me into her office. She's like, Danielle, what is this, like, $60 lunch? And I'm like, oh, I went down to Georgetown. I had a crab cake, glass of Sancerre. It was amazing. She's like, did you realize that we all eat frozen yogurt in the food court?
Like, and there you are, dining, fine dining.
I'm like, what's... I saw nothing wrong with going to a wonderful restaurant, having a nice meal.
I love that so much.
So I was very fortunate that... I was at Calvin for about 3 years, and I just had this epiphany where I was like, God, like, so many people in the world don't have passions, and they need to get a J-O-B. And for me, I had such a passion for wine, so I was like, before I'm making too much money and I'm spending so much time in a career that I'm not passionate about, I need to just make a move. And I did. And so I ended up getting a job at the Smith Wolensky Restaurant Group. I started at the bottom. The president of the company, he was looking for an assistant, and he was about to travel all around the country. They were about to have like massive expansion. So he was traveling to scout locations for future restaurants. Mm-hmm. And so I made a deal with him. I said, look, I said, I will be the best assistant you ever had if you agree to pay for my wine education from the day I start. And then when you travel, I want to work in the restaurants so I can learn like everything there is about wine. And he was like, you got a deal. So I had a pager.
Oh my gosh, I love it. Back in the pager days.
I remember pagers, yes. Not fondly.
But yeah. Exactly. So I had a pager, and when he was traveling, I would work in the restaurants. And it was a little tiny office, and the wine managers would teach me all the nuts and bolts. And I sat and, like, I took an Opus 1 case, and I turned it upside down, and that was my little seat. And I just learned it all, and that's where it all began.
Unbelievable.
So what was your approach to wine education, though? Yeah. I mean, did you do sort of a traditional path, or did you?
I did the WSET. Mm-hmm. So I did level one and level two and just learned about wine. And then just in the working in the restaurants, like I ended up getting promoted very quickly into the wine manager role, basically, for Smith & Wensky.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So how do you even begin something like that? I mean, they had so many locations at that point. Probably, you know, it's a time when a lot of those restaurants... Did they have a robust wine program already, or were you really just building it on the fly?
They had a huge wine program, actually. So Smith & Wensky was founded in, like, 1979, and that was kind of when Opus One, Mondavi, like, all of those wineries
were starting.
Exactly. Yeah. Jordan. And they supported all of those wineries. And being a steakhouse, they sold so much Cabernet Sauvignon. Mm-hmm. So they had a very robust wine program. It just wasn't particularly organized as well because it was more wine managers that were running the wine program. The wine managers preferred tequila over wine.
Probably still true.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So I kind of came in and organized everything. And then, like I said, they were just about to start expanding. So then I was responsible for opening all of their locations around the country. Mm. And that was just learning. Like every state has their own liquor laws. Yes. It's like you just had to learn quickly and just kind of just do it. And it was amazing. It was a wonderful experience.
And so what are sort of the budgets at that point in time for, let's just say, like what was the overall budget for wine, or what were some budgets in particular restaurants?
I don't remember exactly. It was like 20... years ago.
They probably had a healthy budget, let's say.
They had a healthy budget, and the reason for that is that wine and liquor is like the biggest moneymaker in restaurants.
The biggest margins.
Yeah. Exactly,
for sure.
The biggest margins. Yeah. So we did have a big budget, but I don't remember the exact number.
Yeah, yeah. Do you remember, you know, just sort of having certain discoveries, like certain types of wine that you discovered while you were at that job?
Yes, absolutely. So when I was at Smith & Wensky, we realized that the majority of our sales were in American wine. Hmm. So we were opening all over America. So I said to Alan Stillman, the founder, I said, hey, I have a great idea. Why don't, since we are an all-American steakhouse opening up all over America, I think we should change our wine program and have only American wines. Mm. And let's seek out the best wine from Texas, the best wine from Virginia. Like any, we had every state that made wine, we found a wine that was to represent on the wine list. Now, we got a tremendous amount of backlash from the French. Mm. They were so angry. How dare you? Meanwhile, the last time I was in Burgundy, I couldn't find even a Bordeaux.
Completely.
So
hello.
I think, come on. And so for that, I went around to discover like small wineries. And I remember one that I discovered was Sea Smoke.
Oh.
And they were not on the map. They weren't in New York City. And I thought it was like the greatest wine. And so we bought it into New York City, into all the states that had Smith & Wensky restaurants. And it's funny to look back now. They're so popular.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was like a little discovery of mine.
Yeah, big time.
So,
but I want to talk about that was very bold and brave to make that recommendation. And I love it. So I think we've talked a lot about, you know, we as Americans, we go to all these restaurants, everything's so local. We want local meat, we want local cheese, and then we'll have it with a glass of French wine or Italian wine, and to have a restaurant focus on that and to be behind that, I mean, I'm like, how can you say you want local and then you bring all this imported wine in? Like, support, and I agree, like, if you're a Texas restaurant, I hope you have Texas wine on your list. Mm-hmm. But even in Sonoma County, we have a lot of restaurants that don't really support our local wineries. And
yes,
it's like,
that's true.
It's mind-blowing to me that we don't have that kind of support.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to pause and applaud that, because that's a really big deal.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. When I travel all over, it's always just the local wine. So you get Burgundy and Bordeaux and Bordeaux, and
exactly.
Maybe there's a champagne on the list, but that's about
exactly.
it. That's about
exactly.
it.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah? Right.
So wow.
So that's a huge learning curve. I mean, a huge amount of learning in a short amount of time, it sounds like, and expanding. When did you leave Smith & Wollensky, and what did you decide to do next?
So after Smith & Wollensky, I was recruited by the Wynn Resorts to open their hotel and casino in Las Vegas. So I was at Smith & Wollensky for about 7 years, and then I left to open the Wynn.
Uh-huh.
And that was, to be honest, it was terrifying.
it sounds terrifying.
It was.
And
I think because I had so much knowledge, when we opened all of our Smith & Wollensky's around the country, we would like eat, breathe, and sleep that, you know, that location. Mm-hmm. And I would spend a lot of time in, whether it be Dallas or Houston or Pennsylvania. And so I knew how much work it took to open one restaurant at a time. And when I was being interviewed for this Wynn job, it was opening multiple food and beverage outlets, in-room dining, banquets. It was just,
wow.
I remember saying to them, you know, this seems like a huge, huge job. Are you sure this is a job for one person?
Yeah.
And I think because I had such an understanding of how big the job was, they were like, I think she's the right person for it.
Mm.
So I got it, and I wasn't sure if I could do it. And, you know, that's where I had a big team, and it was a tremendous undertaking, but again, you just kind of take it day by day.
Yeah.
And then it just gets easier, you know, like any job, like you just kind of
right, you
go into it, you learn, and then it just gets easier and easier.
And so did you move full time to Vegas?
Yes.
And how was that?
You know, it's a funny story. We had
just like New York, come on.
Sure.
Just like New York. I was such a New Yorker, to be honest. I wouldn't go past Wall Street on the subway. I'm like, I hear Brooklyn's great, but I don't need to see it.
That's
I love
so
Manhattan.
Funny.
It's amazing. So Vegas, I wasn't a big fan of Vegas. And we had a Smith & Wollensky location in Vegas, and I had recently did a wonderful, epic wine dinner with legendary winemakers at our Vegas location. It was super fun. And I remember being on the plane on the way home, and I looked at my husband, and I said, if I never come back to this city again, it would be fine by me. And never say never, because
right.
3 months later, uh-huh. I was house shopping.
Oh, God.
Wow.
So,
And then what? I mean, like, I'm just so intrigued. I mean, that's such a huge move, especially a place you think you're not going to like. Did you like it?
I did. My husband and I, we went from living in a one-bedroom apartment to a four-bedroom house on a golf course. So, you know, our quality of life, we kind of, you know, was upgraded.
Spread out.
It was no state income tax, which was lovely. And it was an exciting job.
Yeah.
So it was fun. You know, it was really, really exciting and very, very fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working all the time. It wasn't, I didn't have much time to really even notice where I was.
Oh my God, what a sad statement. But yeah, I imagine. So we're going to have to take a break pretty short here, but I'd love to know more about just like the difference in approach, you know, from a Smith & Wollensky, multiple locations, growing, opening, to one location predominantly and one city and a casino component too. So,
And lots and lots of people.
Yeah, and they're gambling.
Yeah.
And like that's, you know, do they, how does that inform your wine list, I wonder? So when we come back, I think we need to talk about that a little bit more. But how long were you at Wynn?
So I was at Wynn for almost 8 years, so a little over 7 years as well. I have this like 7 years.
I was going to say, there's a little pattern there.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
I like that.
Mm.
I'm super fascinated. And I actually love that hotel when I go to Vegas, so been there many,
it's
many
a great
times.
Hotel.
Yeah, been there many. So well done.
Thanks.
The result was good. So,
all right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back on the good stuff, we'll talk more with our guest, Danny Price of Fat Dragon Wine.
Thank you.
the good stuff with our guest, Danny Price of Fat Dragon Wine. We haven't even gotten to Fat Dragon Wine yet.
Mythical Fat Dragon Wine.
I know, building it up. Yeah. Okay. But I want to know, back to that sort of last thought I had about, like, how do you approach a wine list or a wine program in a place like Vegas? I mean, it's always transitory, right? I mean, there's always new people coming in. It's a tourist destination. It's a gambling destination. Like, does that change how you think about a wine program?
A little bit. So first and foremost, I had a team in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. So every restaurant had their own wine manager, and we gave full autonomy to the wine managers to choose the wines for that restaurant that paired best with the chef's cuisine.
Okay.
And the reason for that is because I was not working in the restaurants, I wasn't serving the wine, and I really wanted the wine managers to have ownership and feel passionate about the wines that they were selling.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, like I said, my job was really to have control over the overall inventory, and you know, that budget did change from time to time. So it was managing, you know, wine manager may come to me once a month and say, I want these five new Pinot Noirs, and I'm like, okay, great. Well, the five that you loved last month are still in the warehouse, so can you sell those before we order the new stuff? But so, and it was just different in the sense that it was just such a massive program, but it was also easier in some aspects because everything was under one roof.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. And at that point, how much are you tasting? Are you constantly going through different wines?
Constantly tasting. But again, we did that as a team. Mm-hmm. So we would have vintage roll tastings once a month. And again, like, I love wine. I loved my job. And anything I could do to have, like, more fun in the day, I did.
So I love that.
Because we had to taste, you know, every vintage of a wine, it's, you know, it's a new wine. So we would taste as a team. Once a month, we would meet, and I decided that it was a great idea to meet in one of the restaurants. Mm. And then we would have the chef prepare food from that restaurant. So all the wine managers would be able to taste the food from that restaurant. We would taste together as a team and make decisions on which wines to roll over the vintage or which ones to cut. And then the wine managers got the opportunity to taste the food from that restaurant so they can then recommend it to their guests that night.
That.
You know, no one was going to eat it in the same restaurant twice. So they could say, oh my gosh, like, the Italian restaurant Bartolo is amazing. So that was always super fun. I think the big difference between a Smith & Wolensky restaurant program and a Vegas is that Smith & Wolensky was very much like a powerhouse, power lunch, power dinner restaurant. They like to have their trophy wines, let's say. All of our waiters were kind of trained to have the labels on the facing outward because it was a
symbol, kind of
like a showpiece.
It was a symbol. It was exactly. It was look what I'm drinking type of thing. Vegas, it was just, you know, to have your wine on a wine list in Vegas is the greatest thing on earth because even a bad wine tastes good in Vegas. Everybody, nobody is there sitting at a table discussing their potential divorce or having a bad business deal. Everyone's there for fun. Everyone's having a great time. They're in a good mood.
Yeah.
There's just so much positivity, and the wine is just an extension of that fun.
That's fascinating.
I mean, it's so interesting. Like, I hadn't thought about that.
It's almost like you need to, the WSET should have a psychology component, or, I mean, so much of wine presentation
is about that experience, the time and place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really fascinating. So during this time when you're tasting, but are you also doing, you know, when you can, travel that has to do with wine? Are you going to places in Europe or
not
California?
Really, to be honest.
No.
I didn't really travel that much, just personally would travel. I think I went to Italy once when I was there, but no, there wasn't really a travel component.
Okay. So when do you get this sort of, some would say, crazy idea to launch your own wine label one day?
So, you know, it all kind of started when, it's ironic because it was like 25 probably years ago when I was at Smith & Wolensky. I went on my first wine trip to Jordan Winery in Healdsburg.
Nice.
And my husband and I stayed there, and we felt like we were at, like, the Taj Mahal. I mean, it was the most beautiful place we'd ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
We fell madly in love with Healdsburg, Dry Creek Valley, Alexander Valley, the whole wine country, and we were just like, we thought Manhattan was the end-all be-all, but we were like, this is our dream. How do we get out here? So we kind of always had this dream, didn't really know when or how it was going to manifest itself mm-hmm. and take place, but eventually it did.
Okay, so but when is eventually? So when do you really start?
Let's see. So when I was at Vegas, we purchased a property in Napa Valley.
Okay.
And that was kind of like our sanity property. It was, we're not going to be Vegas people forever. We have a dream. And we would go and have a bottle of wine and grab a rotisserie chicken and just sit on our dirt and be like, someday we're going to live here.
That's a great visual.
Sit on our
great
dirt.
Great visual. Yeah.
Someday we'll be out. Eventually left Las Vegas, and my husband and I, we moved to Sausalito. But we never built on our property in Napa because we just didn't feel connected there. Mm. And we eventually sold that property and then just started hardcore looking in the Healdsburg area.
Okay.
We found our property in 2018, and it was just a total gut renovation. We had to, it was a neglected property, mm-hmm. so everything needed to be rebuilt. The vineyard was like a derelict vineyard. We had to rip everything up and replant everything.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that in 2019 is when we replanted the vineyard. And then 2022 was our first vintage of Fat Dragon.
Okay, so 2019, what's the vision at that point? You're in Dry Creek Valley. Mm-hmm. You're right on Dry Creek Valley Road, and you're about halfway down the valley, I would say. Mm-hmm. What was the vision? I mean, you get this neglected vineyard, so the potential was possibly for anything, but did you
She helped open the win. This is like nothing for her.
Well,
come on.
Yeah,
come
it's, a it's a different.
It's a different
thing.
It's a different thing to build.
But yeah, no, I mean, I'm just like curious. Like, just do you see those vines and you're like, we can use those or
no. We kind of knew we had consultants come up and mm-hmm. we knew right away that the vineyard was neglected. It was also a mishmash of Merlot, Cabernet, mm-hmm. some table grapes. Yeah. You know, it was nothing that was salvageable, basically. Mm. And we wanted to start fresh, and we wanted to have everything be new. So we did that. It was a huge undertaking. I think if we knew how big of an undertaking it was, we probably would have been scared away. But we just kind of went in it, not 100% knowing how hard it was going to be. And truly have enjoyed every step of the way.
Yeah.
It's really wonderful.
So what did you plant? Give us kind of the
lay of
the land.
So we decided we planted Cabernet Sauvignon. Mm-hmm. Again, I have a very strong, positive background with Cabernet. and so we thought that would be... Also, Cabernet grows amazing in Dry Creek.
Yeah.
And then we planted all Rhone varietals. So we planted Grenache, Syrah, and Mourvèdre.
Lovely.
And those are just... Personally, I just love those grape varietals.
So all red?
All red.
Okay.
But we do make a rosé of Grenache and Mourvèdre.
Nice.
So we have a little rosé.
Yeah.
So 2022 were the first wines released?
First vintage. First vintage, yes.
And you work with a winemaker?
Yep. We work with a winemaker, Luke Stanko, and we make our wine over at Grand Cru Custom Crush in Windsor.
And so was that like a long process, too, of trying to find the right person for your vision?
Well, so we planted Magnum vines, and we weren't 100% sure if 2022, if the crop was going to be robust enough to even warrant harvesting and producing a wine. So my husband was going on a business trip, and our vineyard management company came to assess the growing conditions and the situation. And it was about 7:30 in the morning, and they basically were like, your vines look amazing, and you're probably going to get about 22 tons of fruit.
Oh, my gosh.
And we were like...
Surprise!
What?
That's
congratulations.
A good surprise.
Yeah.
We were just like, oh, my God. And my husband looked at me, and he just said, I'm leaving on a business trip.
He's like, bye, you deal with this.
You need to find, while I'm gone, he's like, you need to find a winemaker.
A place to crush.
You need to find a place to make our wine, and you need to find wine buyers to buy our fruit, because we only wanted to produce a small amount of wine. And I was like, okay. And I felt like I was 9 months pregnant without a diaper.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
It was so
Here
scary.
Here we go.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and talk more about Fat Dragon with Danny Price. We'll be right back. stuff with Danny Kreis. So so many questions. I always have so many questions. But Fat Dragon Wine is pretty memorable name.
Yeah. And where did that come from?
I think there's a great story behind the name. So yeah. can you tell us?
Story kind of all begins with my grandmother. So as I mentioned earlier, I'm from New York. My grandmother also from New York. My grandmother was not the grandmother that taught me how to bake pies and cookies. She taught me how to play blackjack. And when she babysat, we would have little card games, and I had a little cup of pennies and would bet. And then every Mother's Day, her favorite thing to do was to go to Belmont Racetrack and bet on horses.
Oh my gosh.
I loved betting on horses. As an executive at Wynn, when I was working there, you were not allowed to gamble, but I could place bets in the sports book. So I would routinely place bets on horses and then be in the middle of a meeting and be like, I gotta go. My race is gonna start.
Oh my gosh.
And so we fast forward. I'm now attending a fancy wine dinner in Macau, in Hong Kong. I opened the Wynn Macau, so I spent a lot of time there. And I was attending, there was a big auction taking place, and the auction house was having a fancy dinner, Domaine de la Romanée Conti dinner, at the oldest racetrack in Hong Kong called Happy Valley. So I'm at this dinner, and it was a little boring, to be honest, and I excused myself, and I went down, and I put all my Hong Kong dollars on a horse named Fat Dragon, and it won.
Oh my gosh,
and
stop it.
And I was so elated, and it was the highlight of my trip. I was the happiest person with that win, and everybody kind of asked the question did you use your winnings to buy your vineyard? And I laughed because I spent it all in the bar that night and bought a big 3-liter of Bordeaux, and I think I bought a pair of shoes the next day. That was pretty much it. And so I came home and I was telling my husband the story about my big win, and again, we had always had this dream of having our own vineyard. And he was like, wait a minute. He was like, what was the name of that horse? And I'm like, Fat Dragon. He goes, I think that would be a great name for our winery.
I love that.
So he trademarked it back years and years ago. And it's amazing because it's just so fun right now after, 7 years of replanting the vineyard and then finally having a wine and then having the label, and we're finally at a place where we can serve our wine to people and tell the story. Yeah. And it's just been a lesson in patience and how you got to just hold on to your dreams, and one day they will come to fruition and it will feel great.
And look at you. And so tell us a little bit about your portfolio. How many wines?
So we have 6 SKUs. We have what's so fun is we were always planning to produce a GSM. But then when our Grenache came in, it was so beautiful, so elegant, it was gorgeous. So we were like, we need to bottle 100% Grenache. Then our Syrah came in. Amazing. It was oh my God, this is amazing. Let's do 100% Syrah. The Mourvèdre was a little bit different. That was super funky and went through a lot of stages where we were like, oh my God, what are we going to do with this? But then it just came around and flourished, and that was amazing. So what's so fun about our program is we have 100% Grenache, 100% Syrah, 100% Mourvèdre, and then we have our GSM blend. We also produce a Cabernet Sauvignon, and then we have our Rosé.
Okay.
What a great experience, though, to be able to try each one of those varietals separately and then the blend. I mean, that's goes right back to all your love of wine education all these years, and now you get to provide that experience.
Yeah, and people love it.
Yeah.
It's really, they're kind of getting educated. And,
yes.
And what I love is stylistically, they're so different. And so we have something for everybody.
Yeah.
There are some people who like lighter wines like Pinot Noir tend to gravitate towards our Grenache. Mm-hmm. People who like the bigger wines like the GSM and Syrah. So it's kind of, we're really lucky to have a nice selection of wines.
And so people can't, you don't have a traditional tasting room. Can people taste at Grand Cru?
Yes. So we do tastings at Grand Cru where we make our wine, and then we do site visits at our property in Healdsburg in Dry Creek Valley for anyone who wants to come visit and see the vineyards.
Okay. And so to find out more, it's info@fatdragonwine.com or just visit fatdragonwine.com.
And you can also stay there.
You can.
They have farm cottages that you can stay. Do farm stays. That's awesome.
Yes, I highly recommend that. Well, Danny, we want to thank you so much for being on today's Good Stuff and hearing all about Fat Dragon Wine. FatDragonWine.com.
Thank you. It was so wonderful to be here.
Yeah, thanks.
very fun, good stuff.
And so fun. Okay, do you know my favorite part is every story she had was, and you know I always like to find the most fun in a day, or yeah. I want to make something more exciting. And I was like, I love that just attitude of, yeah, you know, it's kind of up to you to create the environment you want to operate in.
That's very true. And yeah, and then...
And how like, accomplished, too.
And then being patient about, you know, kind of your, what you think your dream is, and yeah. taking your time to get there, and knowing when something isn't right, but ultimately it's all about betting on the ponies.
Betting on the ponies.
I mean, you know.
I know. To leave a wine dinner, go bet on the ponies. And to bet on Fat Dragon.
Yeah.
And then to really bet on Fat Dragon.
Well, and thank goodness that was its name and not like a lot of other things, because horse names are odd.
Like really Harry odd. Horse would not have made as good a name, right?
There's a lot of things that might not look good on a wine label, but I do encourage people to check out fatdragonwine.com. Some great options.
And follow along at Fat Dragon Wine on Instagram, too.
Yes,
so do
very
all the things.
Much. Yeah. Yeah. And there is a place to stay on Dry Creek Road. Beautiful fatdragonwine.com/stay.
There you go.
All right, what are we drinking?
Well, I'm Fat Dragon, of course.
Of course.
I mean, I feel like we should go do that and then go to the casino and gamble or something. I know, we got to bet on something. So something. But I'm a big Syrah fan. I want to try them all, but I am going to do, I think it's their very first vintage is what's out right now, the 2022 Syrah. So 3 years in, I think that's going to be delicious.
It is going to be delicious. And I'm going to match you on that with a 22 Grenache.
Oh, I like that. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should get together and then also bring the GSM blend and we could do our own tasting.
We could.
Or maybe we should just go to her place and let her host us.
That would also be a nice option.
We'll have to let her know we're coming over on Tuesday, see what she thinks.
Yeah. And Danny, as you know, is also part of the Dry Creek.
The Wine Growers of Dry Creek.
Wine Growers of Dry Creek. So very involved in the Appalachian and the community.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I just love that story to the route. I mean, like you said, to start off with this kind of vision of where you want to go and then just kind of keep going with the ebbs and flows of life to get there. Like it's a good lesson.
A lesson to us all. And you can start new things at any point.
Yeah.
Love okay. It. Well, all right. Well, with that.
So much good stuff on today's show. So much good stuff. Good stuff, good stuff.
Well, from Sonoma County to wherever you are, remember to drink the good stuff.
Cheers to that.